Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. In this episode, we're joined by Dr. Fernando Pagan, the Vice Chairman of the Department of Neurology and the Director of the Movement Disorder Program and National Parkinsonism Foundation Center of Excellence at Georgetown University Hospital. He discusses the current state of science in the treatment of Parkinson's disease, particularly focusing on the management of OFF episodes in this patient population, as well as the impact that the COVID-19 pandemic has had on patient care.
I'm Fernando Pagan, Dr. Fernando Pagan, Professor and Vice Chairman of the Department of Neurology at Georgetown University Hospital, also the Director of the Movement Disorders Program at Georgetown University Hospital. Well, the current treatment landscape of Parkinson's really is divided into two different categories. The first one are the treatments for the motor aspects of the disease, and then the treatments for the non-motor aspects of the disease. So Parkinson's disease is both a motor and non-motor disorder, so we really have come to appreciate that, especially over the last 10 to 15 years. So our treatments are definitely getting more highly specialized in attacking those motor symptoms. But a lot of times when we treat the motor symptoms, we can get the non-motor symptoms worse. And sometimes when we treat the non-motor symptoms, we can get we can affect the motor symptoms. So it's really finding a balance between the two, and we're seeing better treatments that really solely treat motor and not really affect the non-motor, and vice versa. So we really are getting more sophisticated in our treatments. We've also have learned that Parkinson's is more than just a dopamine deficiency disorder. So dopamine is the main neurotransmitter in the motor aspects of the disease. But not only are we seeing dopamine deficiency, but we see abnormalities in other neurotransmitters like norepinephrine, acetylcholine, serotonin, histamine, adenosine, and norepinephrine. So all of these are very important, and we have different drugs that modulate different neurotransmitters now to help our Parkinson's patients.
And now, obviously, you know, you mentioned just now that the sort of therapeutic growth in terms of awareness, obviously this month, April, is Parkinson's Disease Awareness Month. Is awareness still a challenge in Parkinson? Obviously, you know, the disease as a whole is probably, I would imagine you would describe it as fairly well known. But is there still any challenge in terms of raising awareness so, you know, research can increase and therapeutic development can increase?
Absolutely. I think awareness is very important because we're seeing the incidence and the prevalence of Parkinson's continue to increase because the incidence of Parkinson's is directly related to the age of an individual and population. And we are living longer, so we're seeing neurodegenerative disorders increase overall. And it's also not only important to know that Parkinson's exists, but it's also important to raise awareness that there's multiple treatments available. I think back in the 70s and 80s, there was more of a wait and see type of approach, and hold off medications until necessary. What we've learned is it's better to start treating earlier rather than later. And I think that's really where the awareness, I think, has to continue in Parkinson's. I think not only are we making the diagnosis more common, but there are things that we can do to help modulate the symptoms of Parkinson's and improve the quality of life of Parkinson's patients. So I think awareness is definitely important. And I think the best message I think that we can give in the month of April is not only can we make the diagnosis, but there's a lot of treatments to help improve the quality of life of those individuals who have Parkinson's and those who are taking care of patients with Parkinson's disease.
And now specifically speaking about some of those therapies, obviously off episodes are, you know, still remain a challenge despite having, you know, a gold standard treatment in levodopa. Are there any therapeutic developments in the pipeline or that were recently approved or, you know, making their way toward the FDA that have caught your eye as particularly promising?
Yes, and I think this is one of the areas that I think a lot of education and awareness has to be done is, you know, what is an off episode? An off episode is that when you're taking your maintenance Parkinson's medicines, they stop working for some reason. So the symptoms of Parkinson's reemerge, and these symptoms can be both motor and non-motor symptoms. And the two therapies that we have that are what we call on-demand treatments for off episodes it's kind of changing the way that we think about off episodes. So if we look at all the maintenance Parkinson's medicines, all the maintenance Parkinson's medicines are to reduce the symptoms of Parkinson's. So we're basically treating off. We're treating the symptoms of Parkinson's. But the medicines don't last 24/7. So there's periods where the medicines aren't effective, and we have to take a new dose. We have to wait for them to kick in. And for some people, they're experiencing a lot of off episodes that not only having a maintenance therapy, but a on-demand therapy can be very beneficial. So the first one that we had was an injectable called Apokyn or apomorphine, and you turn back on. So you get control of the symptoms of Parkinson's, usually within about 5 to 10 minutes, usually within 10 to 20 minutes on label, but we can see clinically about 5 to 10 minutes. But now recently we have an inhaled levodopa that can be inhaled. So it bypasses the gut. And a lot of the reasons why sometimes medicines don't work are because of constipation and the slowness of the GI tract. So you can inhale levodopa and turn on within 10 minutes and you see the peak effect in 30 minutes. And then in the near future, we may see apomorphine yet again, but instead of an injectable underneath the tongue. And again, you'll turn in about 10 minutes or so, and the effects can last 60 to 120 minutes. So I think these new on-demand therapies are definitely kind of changing the way we, as Parkinson's specialists, treat Parkinson's disease. That it's good to have a maintenance therapy, but yet have an on-demand therapy when our drugs aren't working and there's an off period where we need to help improve the quality of life of our patients sooner rather than later. And it doesn't always work to take an extra pill because the gastrointestinal system may be the problem. So we are changing the way that we think about the treatment of these off periods. So you want a maintenance drug, but then you want a drug that's, so to speak, an abortive treatment. And this isn't new to neurology. We see this in the treatment of migraine headaches all the time. You have drugs to prevent the migraine headaches, but when the migraine headaches come in, then you have an abortive agent. So we now have these on-demand therapies so that when patients wake up in the morning that they're going to take, you know, an hour or 2 hours to turn on, they can take a medicine, on-demand medicine, as well as their maintenance medicine right then and there to get their day going earlier rather than later. Or if they're going throughout their daily activities and they eat some ice cream, a cheese, or a hamburger of some sort, and a lot of protein interaction, they can take an on-demand therapy and they don't turn off. They can keep their motor symptoms under better control. So this is a real kind of shift in paradigm, so to speak, of what we're doing in movement disorders, you know, attacking the disorder from multiple different angles. All of our medications are aimed to reduce the off time, but even with using a cocktail approach, our patients still may experience off time. So having an on-demand therapy can be helpful for them.
And now, obviously, you know, you mentioned these sort of new delivery methods that offer this on-demand treatment. Obviously, you know, you mentioned the apomorphine sublingual film. I believe Sunovion is developing one of those. And then you obviously have inhalation products, you know, like inhaled levodopa, things of that nature. Have you found that, you know, those particular routes, whether it's a sublingual film or an inhalation powder, do you find there's enough innovation there and that there are enough products or what's available currently and what's being developed? You know, does it look promising enough to sort of fill that need for now?
So I think I think it's changing the way we're using the inhaled levodopa, known as Inbrija. So this is really giving us a new angle. I think it's really what the biggest challenge, honestly, I think, is with these on-demand therapies, it's really educating patients and providers as well what off periods are, and how we can approach to treat these off periods. I think every patient is a little bit different. Some people really like the injections. Other people hate the injections. Some people really love the inhalation powder. Some people don't like inhaling a powder. So everybody's a little bit different. And then we'll see, once we see the sublingual apomorphine come in, I think, again, this is going to give us a different route of delivery. There may be some patients that may not be able to tolerate that one so well if they're big droolers when they're in their off state, and that can happen sometimes. So, the nice thing is that we have options, and it's important for us as physicians to teach our patients about these off periods, these off episodes, and there's something that we can do. And it's not always treated by giving more levodopa. It's not always treated by giving yet another adjunctive medication. And sometimes in the past, we would just do one thing. We give another adjunctive medication. They were having 4 or 5 hours of off time during their wakeful time, and now we reduced it to like 3 hours, but they can still have those symptoms. So rather than just doing one thing, we can say, okay, we're going to decrease your off time. But when those off periods still come on, you can inhale levodopa. You could put this film, sublingual film, underneath your tongue, or inject yourself with the apomorphine to be able to turn back on. So we have options for our patients. And I think I think April is an awareness month. It's making our patients aware on how to treat these off periods, whether it's going to be an enhancement of their levodopa therapy, adding on an adjunctive therapy, or in addition to doing either of those two, adding an on-demand therapy. And I think that's where we're kind of changing a little bit, because sometimes I think we're waiting to use these on-demand therapies too late, and we probably should be using them sooner.
Absolutely. I mean, early treatment, earlier treatment seems to be the kind of the trend, not just even in Parkinson, but in a number of diseases. So I would certainly agree with that. Do you think that communication, from the physician to the patient about, how to utilize these on-demand therapies, do you think that, obviously you mentioned, that's something that needs to be communicated to patients, but is that something that could improve? Is there enough patient education on that?
So I think it's not only on the patient education side, I think it's also on the physician side, because things have been, so to speak, the same way, for the last almost 40 or 50 years. You just give more levodopa, and that's not always correct. And I think it's learning how to use all these different medications. And I think the best analogy that can be given to physicians, especially neurologists, is that one in migraines, that you have a maintenance therapy and then you have an abortive therapy. And I think that's kind of what I think our Parkinson's patients need, So often we hear from patients that they wake up in the morning and they're waiting 2 hours to get their day going because they're waiting for the medicine to kick in, or they go out and then they're stuck on a bench or in a table in a restaurant for an extra hour to wait for their medicine to kick back in. So I think it's on both sides that we have to educate patients and providers, people who are taking care of Parkinson's patients, that we are able to give treatments both for maintenance and on demand to help improve their quality of life. And you're absolutely right about the first part that you mentioned earlier, is that we have to give treatments earlier, not only for the maintenance on demand therapies, but also for maintenance. So a lot of times we wait till people become significantly disabled before we start Parkinson's medicines. No, we need to start Parkinson's medicines as soon as we make the diagnosis of Parkinson's. Again, we don't have to always use a ton of medicines, but our patients who at least start a specific treatment, whether it's an MAOB inhibitor, dopamine agonist, or levodopa earlier, have better health status than those that use no medications as soon as their diagnosis is made.
Absolutely. And then before, obviously, you alluded to, you know, sort of how it is nice to have these on-demand therapies, and it is nice to have, you know, treatments available. But obviously, there are still some, you know, some needs and some challenges. Are there any non-pharmacologic approaches or devices, or has there really been anything in that area of development that sparked your eye in the past year or so, couple of years?
Well, I think, you know, definitely the therapies are always helpful. Exercise, these exercises definitely decrease the progression of disease in my eyes. So exercise is extremely important. If we start seeing people having freezing episodes, because freezing can happen when you're off, but it can also just happen as part of the progression of disease. So using walkers or using special lights or canes with lights, or these walkers with these laser lights, can, you know, stop some of the freezing and, again, prevent the fall. So it's all about fall prevention. So this is an area that I think we still continue to need more research in. But I do think that all of our patients should be exercising regularly as part of their disease. And either the different devices that are available, especially if they're freezing, to prevent the falls, because a fall could be more devastating on the disease, especially if it causes immobility. So things that can prevent the freezing, again, are laser light. There's a special walker called the U-Step walker that has a laser light that can be very helpful. But I think we still need further work on that. And we'll continue to see, hopefully, better devices come out.
And then, you know, before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you, obviously, you know, in the midst of a pandemic, and, you know, obviously we've had some conferences that have sort of gone virtual, but I was curious about, you know, the MDS-PAS meeting. Were there any major highlights that, you know, you were looking forward to, or that, you know, you took away from it that you'd like to, you know, sort of share your insight on?
Yeah, so the MDS-PAS meeting actually happened, but the rest of the meetings after that have been canceled. But, you know, it was really interesting at that particular meeting that you got to see tyrosine kinase inhibitors were kind of on the forefront of potentially being beneficial for disease-modifying therapies. But you had one major study from our group, the Georgetown group, and one study from the Parkinson's study group. Unfortunately, the Parkinson's study group stopped their study a little bit early at 6 months. And they said, it doesn't look like it's beneficial, but our study, we followed patients for over 15 months and then open label for an additional 15 months after that. And after the 6 month period, you actually start to see potential benefits, and you start to see markers that there may be some disease modifying benefits with a drug called nilotinib. So I think there's more to come with these tyrosine kinase inhibitors. So nilotinib may not be the only one. There's one called bosutinib. There's another one called K0706 that are in our clinical trials. And I know the Michael J. Fox Foundation is looking at one called Inhibicase as well. So the story isn't over yet for the tyrosine kinase inhibitors for potential disease-modifying benefits. And in fact, in the long-term Georgetown studies, there's a lot of markers in this phase 2 study. A phase 2 study is really meant for safety. So we saw the safety in both trials, but the efficacy, there's definitely some markers that popped up in the longer-term study that look very encouraging. And then there's other drugs that are being looked into. And unfortunately, during the COVID-19, a lot of the trials are kind of being hurt a little bit because people can't come in for their follow-up visits. But there are other medications that are being looked into. So kind of look forward for the pandemic to be over, because there's still a lot to come for disease-modifying therapies. But there are a lot of products out there that look very encouraging. And I think the ones still leading the way are the tyrosine kinase inhibitors, to be honest.
And obviously, I know I said last question, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, you know, obviously we are in the midst of, like we mentioned, this COVID-19 pandemic. you know, everyone across the board in healthcare has obviously been impacted by this and is sort of in the midst of either treating patients or adjusting to a shift in, toward telemedicine or whatever the situation might be. Just real quick, you know, how has, you know, your practice been impacted and you know, how has your day-to-day been affected by this?
Sure. So I think there is a silver lining in this. I think we've been catapulted into telemedicine. And I think this was an area that we've been struggling for years as physicians to get started a little bit because of all the red tape, et cetera. Now all that is gone. And I think there is a benefit, especially for Parkinson's patients that have difficulty coming into the clinics. We've been able to see them actually more and be able to help them. And we can still make adjustments for medications, et cetera. The other benefit that I've seen is that we have seen our physical therapists and speech therapists also using telemedicine, and especially with speech therapy, something like the Lee Silverman voice therapy program. It made perfect sense to do this via telemedicine, but we just didn't have the platforms or the ability to charge for them, et cetera. You know, we had all these barriers unless you lived in a rural area. And now we're seeing our patients actually get access to this from their own home. And it's something like speech therapy that makes perfect sense to do over telemedicine. So I think we definitely have adopted quickly into telemedicine, especially for Parkinson's patients. I think this can be very helpful for them. And because sometimes our patients are traveling 1.5 hours or 2 hours to come into, or more sometimes to come into the clinic, and now we're able to take care of them from their house. So, of course, there are some things that are better done at the bedside, and there's other things that can definitely be done through telemedicine or video teleconference. And I think what this has done, I think this has introduced our patients and how to use this technology and still be able to access us and us be able to readjust our medications or start new medications through these new technologies. So I think there is a silver lining in it. And again, our main reason for doing this is to keep our patients healthy, especially in our age group. They tend to be a little bit more vulnerable. And I hope we all make it through this and look forward to meeting our patients face to face again. But again, this has given us new tools to be able to help our patients as well.
Thanks for listening to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. For more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.